Shop the Sherwin-Williams sale and get 30% off Duration, Woodscapes, and SuperDeck products May 1st through the 11th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hello and welcome to the NRF1 podcast. The racing is back, and back with a bang, be it crashes, controversy, or Lewis Hamilton's ridiculous attire. We are here in the fine city of Norwich, the county of Norfolk, and Formula One's spiritual home of the United Kingdom, to bring you our take on the Formula One action at the opening round of the 2016 season in Melbourne, Australia. And what a panel we have tonight. There are six of us here, lots of people. Let's start to my right. Perry Hamilton is back in the pod.
Hello, how's it going?
Very, very good. How does it feel to be back, Ped?
I've loved it. I've missed it, and it's been horrible listening to it and not being able to make it. But the problem is, I didn't watch the racing last year. So, whilst I, you know, come for you to all look at me, it's not a visual medium. So,
fair point. That was what we, you know, designed when we started this whole thing up, didn't we? So, brilliant to have you back. Richard Baxter is here again. Rich did give us a word or a sound that summed up your enjoyment of the Australian Grand Prix.
G'day.
Oh, I see. Listen to that. Consummate professional. Steve Rust here. He's got a big beaming smile on his face due to the Prediction League, but we won't be touching on that until the second part of the podcast, our Bahrain preview. Steve, you're well?
Yeah, very well. Thanks. Yeah, it's good to be back.
First time of the season?
It is, yeah. First time, yeah, because I missed the pre-season one.
You did, but you got in your pre-season predictions. So in the mammoth list of predictions, we'll be going through those later on as well. DT is back. David Tillier, how the devil are you, and what have you been doing in however long it is since you were last on here?
I can't actually remember how long it's been. It's definitely, I didn't do one last year, so I can't remember. But
I don't think you were, are you doing paramedicing?
Yes, so in March I started my degree pathway to become a paramedic.
So if any of us keel over, we're all right.
Yeah, I'm not on duty.
I'm first aid trained at work, mate, so I think we'll be all right anyway, wouldn't we?
I mean, yeah, I'd be good with cuts.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Like, as in paper cuts.
I know the number for 999, so...
Yeah, wow, we are so covered.
I had to save it in my phone. Can't remember.
It's 911, isn't it?
So, I don't think you were... Maybe you just started training before, maybe not. I can't remember. You drive a lot of Lotuses now, I notice.
I own two Lotuses.
I still believe that the plural of Lotus is Lotai. We discussed this previously on the pod at one point, so...
Is it?
Official terminology.
Is it?
If you say so.
Yeah, that's good enough for us. Brilliant to have you back, DT. And Carl Cumbers, the main man, the oracle, still the oracle. Well, maybe we'll get into that later. Have you got a noise for us that summed up Australia?
A noise?
Yeah.
Not really a noise.
I mean, a word is a noise. You can have a word.
A word, promising.
Oh, I can look at that. Simple, straight to the point. Love it. Right, let's get on with it then, shall we? The race. Nico Rosberg won it. As everyone predicted? No, no one predicted that. Some people did. And it was convincing. So is anyone convinced now that this could be Nico's year if they changed their mind? Because, you know, let's be honest, in the last pod, I said there's no way he will be world champion this year. Anyone?
No.
All right, well, there we go. That's that point discussed then.
Interesting point from DC on the commentary, though, was that traditionally, when a team scores a 1-2 in the first race, the first place driver goes on to win the championship. It does give him that lead from out of the gate, and obviously, you're going to have to work hard to catch him now. But I just think Lewis is more tenacious.
This is it. No one seems to be taking it seriously. I mean, I thought he carried on what he did But I mean, I guess Lewis kind of got a dodgy start, and that was what did him.
I think. They were both pleased. Rosberg was pleased with the victory, but Hamilton was pleased with his qualifying pace. Was 0.3 quicker than Rosberg. So I kind of think everybody was kind of happy with the result. Even Ferrari, their sort of race pace looked quite good. So they were pleased. So yeah, I think everybody's just pleased and looking forward to the rest of the season.
The thing about Lewis, his 50th career pole, so that was a big plus point for him. Got one of my many stats here. In finishing second, Lewis Hamilton equaled Michael Schumacher's record of 6 podium finishes in Australia. On Saturday, the Briton joined the great German in becoming one of just 3 drivers, the other being Ayrton Senna, to have scored 50 or more pole positions in Formula One racing. Lucky Lewis.
Wow, that's quite a stat.
Good stat, isn't it? So obviously he's got the pace, he didn't quite have the start. So is this a trend that's going to continue because the cars are different, the rules regarding what they're told to do are different, DT?
I think it's probably just an early wobble from Lewis. I think he was fairly dominant most of the weekend. It's just that bit of the race. And then he fought his way back and he did pretty well to end up back in second. So I think that's probably why he didn't look too miffed at the end, because he'd made good on a pretty bad situation. But I think he'll be back to form in the next race, and I don't think Nico's really got an answer for him still. I think Nico might be there or thereabouts, but he's just not quite on the same level.
Surprises me this. I thought someone would have changed my mind. Nico Rosberg's victory, here's another one, was his second in Melbourne, coming 2 years after his first, and 31 years after his father KK won the very first race on Australian soil in Adelaide. Rosberg has now won 4 successive races, his win streak starting in Mexico last year. Mercedes, meanwhile, have been victorious for 7 straight races. And it's all about Mercedes this year. Is that what we're assuming from here?
Yeah, I'd say so. It was great work from Ferrari. And actually, I would say we're going to see a bit of a battle at some of the other tracks. I do think Ferrari screwed the pooch by not changing Vettel's tyres. I mean, he could have been in that race to win it if they'd gone onto those mediums and run him to the end. Hamilton was on him, he went to the end. He had good pace, could keep Vettel behind him. There's no reason to think that Vettel couldn't do the same. So for me, that's Ferrari shooting themselves in the foot. It's nothing to do with Seb. And you know me, I'm the first person to pile on Seb when he's down. But no, I actually got to think he drove a cracking race. But if Ferrari can get their finger out and get their strategy right, they will be a serious challenge. But over the long haul, they might win 1 or 2 races this year, maybe 3, 4. But over the long haul, they're not going to win a championship this year.
So everyone here, it's Lewis and it's Mercedes, yeah?
Yeah. I wouldn't cut it so clean and dry as that, because it's the first race.
You can't say that because you already predicted that Vettel win it. So.
Well, I said it's annoying enough to do it. But but I think after the first race, to be fair, the Australian Grand Prix isn't always the most exciting like race of the season, and we could have some more drama that starts throughout the year. So I think it'll be interesting to see the next couple of races. If it's dominated by Mercedes, then we know what we're in for. But if someone else sneaks in there as well, then we could be on for a cracking season still.
I think you sort of mentioned the Hamilton's bad start and Rosberg's wasn't much better, but maybe the Ferrari's was a very good start, and they've had a bit of a history of doing that. So maybe if they can qualify on the second row of every race, then they might cause some problems for Mercedes.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a bit of a resurgence from Ferrari. They obviously had a pretty good season last year, obviously the second best, best of the rest, as it were. I think this year they're going to be stronger. I don't think they're going to be on par with Mercedes. I think that car is an evolutionary, it's an evolutionary step, but it is a step nonetheless. But the Ferrari, I think they have raised their game. They seem to have improved their powertrain as well. And I think in Vettel's hands, possibly not Raikkonen's, unfortunately, I think they might do quite well.
Well, the powertrain's good if it doesn't go pop, but we'll get stuck into that in a moment. We've got the new things to talk about then. Qualifying format. I've stuck this at the top of the podcast. I have a fear we could probably talk about this for the next half an hour or so, but it came in, it went. No one liked it, and the teams all changed it. And as far as things stand now, the 90-second elimination format in all 3 qualifyings is going to be ditched from Bahrain, and it will revert to last season's format, back to as was. I think it's such a shame that they just didn't spend a bit more time and have a bit of a think about it all, because I know that there was quite a lot of noise about it just having to be ditched and the fans didn't like it. But how do you guys see it?
Well, I found it intriguing. It was quite interesting to see that go. I mean, the first part of quali, I mean, there was everyone was rushing to get out on track. There was a bit of excitement because you think, oh, is he going to make it? But then you suddenly realise, wait a minute, you've got 90 seconds and you're sitting in the pits. That's not long enough to get out and do a lap. So you could kind of tell, 4 or 5 minutes in advance who was out, because they were still sitting in the pits. But I did see someone I know sent me a link, and it was saying that the drivers have sent a letter complaining about the governors of the sport bringing in stupid rules and then getting rid of them straight away, and it needs better direction. So it could be interesting.
Who have they sent the letter to?
About
the governors.
To the press, I think, basically, because it was everywhere this afternoon.
How do you go above those heads? Like, if you can't get what you want from your direct manager, you go above their head.
You've got the World Motorsport Council, though, haven't you?
That sounds fantastic.
Which is the body of, you know, the kind of above all of the sports, isn't it?
You kind
of
get the feeling they all sit around a table with hooded cowls on and old ancient steering wheels as symbols of power, don't you?
Well, they don't control Formula One. It's a bit it's at a loss in terms of leadership.
I think it worries me more that you know, we who watch Formula One, we accept that this is the sport that we love. It might frustrate us, it might annoy us, but we accept that this is it, and we kind of have an understanding about how Formula One operates. Not wanting to steal a point from another podcast I listened to yesterday, but what worries me is how it looks to the general public that aren't really interested in Formula One, because it just looks like Formula One's a bit of a joke, because no one really knows what's going on. They bring one thing in, then they toss it out the next, and it seems like it is run in such an odd fashion, which is true. But you know, from the outsider looking in, it's a bit of a farce.
I wrote a blog, shock horror again, but yeah, I've written a blog, nrf1.uk/MJB Quali. I gave it a little short link. That was impressive.
I actually read that earlier.
What do you think, Rich?
You were like on fire, like hating on people. It was pretty good.
Checks in the post. No, but literally the point was not necessarily that they brought the change format in, because to me, Q1 and Q2 was far from a disaster. There were tweaks, but you could tweak it. You could give them give them the time to go out and do a fresh lap, maybe, and then eliminate two instead of one. Do something, and then all right, maybe not have it in Q3, so you still have a shootout, but you could fiddle with it. You know, you've gone with it, alter it and make it better. Don't just all ditch it, and then you're gonna have complete flip flop after one time. Even people like Lewis Hamilton were saying, well, I hope we don't get rid of it immediately and we give it a little bit of time to figure it all out. And then you have Bob Fernley saying, well, we didn't actually vote to have it ditched, which is amazing because it's supposed to be a unanimous decision for it to be ditched. So what on earth is going on?
It wouldn't surprise me if they took this season to actually work out the kinks and then maybe try and introduce it again, maybe after the break, after the mid-break or next season. So I know what you're saying, like give it a tinker and give it a try, but actually how long is it going to take before those drivers start to get really narked off with the fact that every time they set up to qualify, they've got to remember a different set of rules and they're being told different things by their engineers. You can't change stuff mid-season. Kind of one rule for one rule for the other. If you're going to stop me testing during mid-season, you're going to stop me testing and running the car whenever I want, then I should stop you making those rule changes wherever I want. You need a fair set of guidelines for the drivers to work to.
Did anyone like it?
I thought it was a complete mess. I felt sorry for the fans as well at the track, because how did you know what was happening?
That's a great point.
And every 90 seconds, somebody's dropping out. Or I mean, we watched Jenson Button in his car pretty much count down himself when he's knocked out, and then, oh, fair enough, I'm off. And that was just
lunchtime.
And like Damon Hill said on Sky Sports in Quali 3, that Lewis Hamilton could have got out and waved his own checkered flag. And you've got Vettel walking around in jeans, and it's just, yeah. They could have made it slightly simpler, maybe introduce 4 qualies so there's more people checked out, you know. But it's just, yeah. It was too rushed, like the double points was rushed before the 2014 season. It was, yeah.
Well, it took them Q2 to discover the clock, didn't it? Because they didn't, and their Q1, I was like, well, this isn't going to work. But then at least they had the clock, so you knew what was counting down.
I was going to say, that was my one highlight of the qualifying, of the guy just waving a checkered flag for no one. It was just...
See, that's why this podcast is brilliant. That was Rich's highlight, one of his highlights of the weekend.
I'm just thinking, actually, do you know what? Carl, I think, may have just hit the nail on the head there for me, in that you have 4 qualies and almost have it like a tournament bracket. So your 4 qualies are your quarters. The top guys from that, and you're drawn into your brackets randomly at the beginning of the weekend. The top guys from that go through to the final quali session, and that gives you your top 10, or however you want to split it down numbers-wise.
US sports, F1 style.
Works.
Doesn't it just?
Similar in Formula E. Isn't they've put that into groups of about 5 cars, and then they work out.
I don't watch Formula E. I wasn't ripping that off. I promise you, I don't. I've watched one Formula E.
Hey, we will not hate on Formula E. I mean, possibly.
I think the best way for them to go back would be to go backwards and just have like one quali session, actually even like make it really short. I know that would be rubbish for the people at the track, but just put everyone on track at once, 15 minutes, go nuts, fastest guy is on pole.
Or instead of having everyone on track at once, you have that hour long session, but you have a set time, but the time overlaps. So, okay, I've got a 12-minute window, but three of those minutes will be when other cars are on track as well. The team after me will also be on track. And at that point, you've then got to go, okay, we can either try and get our laps in as quick as we can and do the quickest we can, but then you'll have the teammates pairing off against you. So, example, Lewis and Nico go first. If Nico puts in a cracking lap with bang on 3 minutes to go and he's ahead of Lewis, you're damn straight Lewis will want to go out there and smash out a better lap. But you then got to run the risk of there's going to be other traffic out there, maybe. But then I suppose you'd get, if Toro Rosso was drawn next to Ferrari, you bet your bottom dollar they're sitting in their garage. They ain't going out and running in Ferrari's way, are they? So, I don't know.
I love it. Well, we've already solved the tyre problem. Should we move on to that? The tyre strategy of the three tyre compounds, that seemed like that worked quite well. Are we all happy about that? And we won't touch on Bahrain yet. We'll do that in the other podcast.
But don't you remember someone wrote a specific blog last year kind of mentioning about three compounds?
Exactly. That's what I mean. We are solving F1's problems. Not only that, I think you sent it via a tweet to Paul Hembury, didn't you?
Yeah.
And he never replied, exactly. Which doesn't mean he didn't read it, does it?
Exactly, yeah. He may have, yeah, stole that idea.
No, I'm serious. We're literally claiming that was our plan. And it's worked. You're happy with... I mean, is it when you came up with the idea, Kyle? This is how you envisaged it, isn't it?
Possibly, yeah.
I'll just say yes.
Yes, all right, yes. But I think it made it exciting. Plus, I think if it wasn't a red flag, it made it even more exciting. It would be interesting to see Hamilton's strategy on the medium tyre. Yeah.
When the safety car came out, I thought this is working a treat for Hamilton because everyone will dash in and pit, but actually he won't have to, so he'll keep track. And then as soon as the red flag came out, you just thought, oh, hope's dashed. Because when you pull everyone over at that point, jack them up, change tyres, set them out on boots, new boots, and you just thought, safety car, yes, red flag, no.
We can leave this in or not, but they've put the tyre indicators, haven't they, on the cars, on the graphics, so you know what everyone is on, yeah, in terms of tyres. Did we have that last season?
Yes.
We did have that last season.
We did have that last season.
Some of them were full, maybe?
I'm sure we did. We at least had it when they showed the cars on the grid. It at least showed you, yeah, the cars on the grid, what tyres they qualified on. I'm sure they did it during the races last year, but then I watched hardly any Formula 1 last year. So maybe I'm thinking from the year before, maybe they were.
They ditched it.
I seem to recall that they were, but I'm happy to take the consensus.
In fairness, they do it now, so that's a good thing. Some of them were full and some of them were outlined. Did anyone work out? I guess one was scrubs and one was new set.
Yeah, I think it's... I can't remember which way it is.
If no, dark, that was what
I... scrubbed, I think. Yeah, so if it's brighter, they're fresh. Fresh tyres, I think.
Okay. Because one was like the outline of a tyre with the letter and the other one was sort of full colour.
So they're fresh
tyres. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
They haven't been used in qualifying. I think it kind of works out.
So that's one of those things they haven't explained, have they?
Yeah.
All right.
That definitely wasn't in the idea that Kyle came up with.
No, that bit. Yeah, Kyle, you should have explained it. They'd have got it together.
But they were putting the number of laps the tyres had done on as, yeah, well, hadn't they? Which was also interesting.
Yeah, very, absolutely. Completely agree.
I think it was really nice that it added another element to F1. And one of the things I like about F1 in the same way that I enjoy NFL is that it's got tactics and strategy. And that's one of the things that we enjoy. Those of us who really enjoy Formula 1, it's not just about the racing, it's about the team strategic element. And having those extra compounds just, for me, made it that bit more interesting.
And being able to follow who's doing what, that's the big thing, absolutely. How about the race radio rules, Steve? Because I thought this would mean that we wouldn't hear from anyone, but actually it wasn't too bad. And we subsequently found out, I think, that Nico Rosberg had a problem. His engineer couldn't communicate with him about it, and they were wondering if it was going to end his race with sort of 15 laps to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think this kind of harks back to what we were saying with some of the decision-making in Formula 1, really, because they went and made a change on that before the race, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, which is how ridiculous it's got. But I think it's sort of typical FIA for me, really. They'll just come up with these things with what seems to be no consultation, and they just say, right, this is the rule. And then when you get people sort of say, well, no, hang on a minute, what about this, this, and this from different angles and aspects, And then they'll either just sort of go, well, it's the rule, that's it, deal with it, or just go, oh, well, we'll just cancel it then. You know, like the qualifying with the, you know, the knockout thing. But, I mean, the problem is with the radio that I still had is, I mean, they nearly retired Rosberg because they couldn't tell him to look after the tyre that was about to go pop on the rear. So you could have had somebody drop out of the race for a reason that otherwise wouldn't have been with the old system, where you could have told them over the radio. And I just sort of think, well, they've got to be a little bit more flexible with this.
I guess it only works if the driver can sense what the danger is and sort it out himself. If not, then there's not a lot he can do.
They're not going to know until it happens. They'll be able to feel the tyres going off, but they're not going to know which one, you know, needs a little bit of work to keep it going. They're just going to all of a sudden one minute just find themselves swapping ends and might have a deflation on the tyre, and that's game over for them.
But that might be quite good,
isn't it? Because sorry Michael, just jump in there, because they did communicate about brake wear to Perez, I think, during towards the end of the race, saying, what's your brake, your brakes are critical, if you keep going we won't make it to the end. And they did say, yeah, if there's something is critical to the fact that it might end a driver's race, they are allowed to communicate that.
Something about safety, wasn't there?
If you're looking at a tyre that is actually properly going to go full, you know, delamination and just fly off the car and the car's going to just hit a dead spin, then surely they'd be able to communicate that, because otherwise it's a danger.
Well, afterwards, Toto Wolff was saying we weren't able to tell our guy, and that's why we considered retiring him. But
so that to me suggests that there's even less clarity around what you can and can't do around this rule change currently.
Or what you've just said, I didn't know that either. I assumed that it was just like nothing.
Yeah,
that's why we had Toto Wolff coming out.
There was a message on the radio from the Force India team to Perez saying, your brake wear, does anyone else remember this, or am I going crazy?
Yeah.
So saying, you know, your wear is critical. If you keep going like this, there's no way you'll finish the race, so just ease up on the brakes.
I was going to say, my understanding was that they were allowed to tell them about potential, you know, things that could potentially retire the car. So, and that's a safety thing. But I mean, my two cents is, I have just two words for it: it's pathetic.
The rules,
yeah, it's pathetic. These cars are highly strung, hugely technological, computer run machines. They're not 1980s F1 cars or 1960s F1 cars. They need communication, and that's what they live on, that's what they thrive on. And I've never seen it as a bad part of the sport. I don't think it adds to the sport. I think it detracts from the sport, personally.
What about the element of someone just going out and then mixing things up because they can't deal with it?
I don't think that's part of the sport for me, personally.
That's a fair point.
I think there was a quote from Vettel as well that said they want us to take, you know, they want to take Formula One back to the 80s, but the cars aren't what they were back in the 80s.
It's a great point.
With the extra emphasis on driver safety. So they want to go back to the 80s, but they want the drivers safer. Now, the cars undoubtedly are safer than they were in the 80s, as proven by Alonso's crash, and he just walked away from it. But at the same time, the cars, as DT has quite rightly said, are massively more technologically advanced, so you have to have that element of safety in there.
Well, maybe Mercedes don't like the new radio race rules, and they've decided to use that as a nice little story to put out there, and, you know, just to emphasise the fact that it's such a pain. I mean, I don't know, I'd hate to be cynical about the whole thing, but
gamesmanship.
But there we go. Well, this is it. I have another stat: 3 drivers finished the race in identical positions to where they finished in the same race last season.
Nico Rosberg. No, he wasn't. It was the year before. Damn.
You can't have seen them.
No, I haven't.
Anyone want to guess?
I'm going to say Perez.
No.
Oh, damn it. Go on then.
Grosjean.
No. Good that. Chat, though. No.
Ricciardo.
No.
Oh. Massa.
Did someone say Vettel?
Julian Palmer.
No. It was Sebastian Vettel, 3rd, Nico Hülkenberg, 7th, and Carlos Sainz in 9th. How about that? For the first time ever in Melbourne, the first 13 drivers... the first 13 drivers home finished on the lead lap, the highest number in history, and a good indication of the competitive nature of the grid. So it says the Formula One website. Classic.
There was a red flag.
Oh, there was a red flag. What? Yeah. Come on, Kyle. Whatever.
You mean the website owned by the organisation that it's promoting?
Said something positive. I'm shocked.
People say they don't know how to market these things. Right. We've had so much to get through. We're late with these, but here they are. The NRF1 pit stops. Right, With it being opening weekend, I feel like we need to go through the whole grid, but we'll try and do it nice and quickly. Ferrari, you touched on it earlier, Ped, with the muck-up on Vettel's strategy. Anyone else think that that cost Vettel the race?
Yeah, the best way to describe their race was 50-50. They had some good moments, which were getting in the lead, having the pace, but also then they shot themselves in the foot with their strategy because, as I said earlier, Vettel could have won the race if they had chosen better, but they had some excuse for it. But
I agree with none of that.
Personally,
I don't think Ferrari have gone backwards, but I think Mercedes have made a fairly chunk step forwards.
Which is interesting because people are saying that the gap is closer, because, even though they've both improved. But.
Because you got the gap in qualifying was huge. And when Vettel had the super soft tyres on, he had Rosberg behind him on the mediums. Now, he should have at least been 2 seconds lap quicker. All he pulled on him was 3 seconds. And even that then faded off. So that suggests to me that they didn't have the pace to win the race and actually don't really have much race pace versus Mercedes.
Oh, I love it, Steve. We'll have to see how it pans out.
I can't believe that nobody else has actually said that on any of the websites or any of the forums, Steve, or anything.
Hashtag ask Steve.
It was 8.5 tenths was the gap between, you know, the fastest Mercedes to the nearest, for, you know, in qualifying. I mean, that's huge.
I love it. What we did learn is that a wheel nut costs £800 on the Ferrari. I think that came up on the BBC commentary at some point, randomly.
Channel 4.
Oh.
2016.
How much does a Caterham F1 team wheel nut cost?
I forget. Fiver?
Because I've got one.
Won't be £100, DT, I'm sorry. But of course, it was one of those dodgy wheel nuts that mucked up, I think, Vettel's, one of Vettel's pit stops. But there we go. There was some cracking overtaking, though. Kimi Raikkonen's engine going pop, which was a bit of a shame. I mean, that, you know, interesting. That's a power unit gone already, just through reliability. 10 points for the marshal who put out the fire.
It was Martin Brundle's commentary. He just said, "Well done, Australian marshal." And yeah, can wrap it up more perfectly than that.
It's a star.
The amazing thing was, it's like he had all of the Ferrari mechanics there, and he came in with the flame shooting above his head, and they just sort of looked around and was like, you know, what do we do? And then this marshal just comes running across, thankfully, with a fire extinguisher. I just sort of thought, well, I know you've got fire extinguishers in the garage. Why didn't someone go and get it?
Speaking of the Ferrari mechanics as well, after the race, I can't remember if it's Channel 4 or Sky, but on the coverage you could see in the background, two Ferrari mechanics just standing there having a smoke. You think, classic, everyone else is hard at work and you just, yeah, just chilling.
I think the reason none of the mechanics for Ferrari went to put out the fire is because they all knew that Maurizio Riva-Bene would just look at it sternly and the fire would probably go away.
Yes, those eyes.
That fantastic, isn't it? I'm starting to develop more of a soft spot for Ferrari just because of him.
Fair point. Let's touch on Haas, shall we? Romain Grosjean. We won't tell you what, we'll discuss this more in our Bahrain preview podcast, if that's okay. But we've got to touch on how well they did, and the fact that Romain Grosjean was called a dude, I think, by Mr. Haas. Best performance by a new team since 2002. The first brand new team to score points on their Grand Prix debut since Mika Salo finished 6th for Toyota in that year. Haas also the first American team to score points since the similarly named yet completely unaffiliated Team Haas finished 6th with Alan Jones at Monza in 1986. Worth noting, love this, that Grosjean only finished in the top 6 once last season with Lotus. So, I mean, incredible performance, really.
Yeah, I was at Spa when you got 3rd, wasn't it, with Lotus?
Exactly. So, could you give us a line of the feeling at Haas, Kyle?
They're very pleased. Very, very pleased. I actually watched the race with a few Haas employees, and they were, yeah, very pleased at the end.
Bouncing off the walls, I should think.
Yes, a lot of hard work, and they were rewarded. Good, I think, man. It was the most impressive. It was Hülkenberg was behind him from the restart and never looked like threatening him at all. The race pace was quite impressive, so...
Well, we'll touch on Force India in a moment. McLaren, I've got next. The Alonso crash with Gutierrez, and we haven't even touched on that yet. I mean, it was what brought the red flag and the safety car. A horrible crash. To me, the picture of the wreckage at the end, we obviously saw before we saw the actual crash, and the wreckage was almost worse than the crash. The crash didn't look that bad. Am I being, you know, it obviously was bad, but it was almost more impactful looking at the McLaren sort of stricken at the end, I thought.
I think it was more shocking because we didn't know what happened. All of a sudden, it's just like there it was, and we hadn't seen it unfold. But actually, then when they played it back, you know, and you see the car, especially that camera shot they had inside the barrier, and you could see the slow motion. You could see Alonso's head sort of bouncing around inside, and how it, because of where it clipped and it sent it up in the air, that is probably what saved him any major injury, because the bit where he was upside down, he was, you know, up in the air and doing a fairly good flying impression. And luckily, the bit that hit the ground was underneath the car. But yeah,
he counts himself lucky to be alive. A horrendous crash. So thank goodness everyone was okay. And I thought it was quite a touching moment that Esteban Gutierrez was out quickly and you know made sure that Fernando was okay. Aside from that, is there anything positive out of McLaren, Steve? Did you see a bit more signs of life from them that this season might not be as dog ugly as last?
Yeah, no, I did. I mean, I thought in qualifying that they weren't really too far off and getting into the top 10, you know, pace-wise, realistically. I mean, that was quite a long way off that stage from last season. So they've made quite a decent, sizable step forward, but that's still, when you sort of compare that to, you know, obviously the fastest times, or at least the front row, there's still quite a long, long way off for an otherwise big team, you know, like McLaren.
Absolutely. Red Bull, though, I was really surprised at their pace. I mean, maybe I was just expecting them to be rubbish this year, to be honest, with their watch engine. But they weren't. And Daniel Ricciardo finished fourth, best performance by an Australian in his home Grand Prix. And then fastest lap as well, which was probably the big surprise for me. Anyone else surprised, or am I on my own here?
It is quite surprising considering the engine they had last year, and I mean, it's just compared to this year, it's obviously improved a lot. And he was also quite a long way ahead of both Renault cars, so it must have been quite a smug moment for Christian Horner. At least he probably stopped whinging for 5 minutes.
as if. Daniel Kvyat didn't get to start the Grand Prix for the second year in a row, having mechanical failures, meaning he didn't get to race. I just have to enjoy it on the simulator, I'm afraid, Daniel. Toro Rosso, the other Red Bull.
My team. They're going to be my team this year. I've been banging on the Toro Rosso drum for a while now. They are developing into a genuinely enjoyable team to watch, and they're going to get... And as I was watching it, I thought, rubbish. I went for a double Force India points finish, and actually I should have gone for a double Toro Rosso points finish. Should have happened. I think those guys, both of those guys, drove brilliantly. Max had a bit of a step out of line at the end, and there was a little bit of clipping going on. But ultimately, they drove well. They raced each other a lot. They both drove hard. You could tell Max wanted it. And massive kudos to the team as well, because they didn't part with any of his tantrum rubbish. He got on the radio going, come on, there's got to be a better way. I want to get past. And the engineer was just like, go for it then. You want to get past? You get past. Like, that's on you. And I just think really well conducted. And they are a team that over the last few years have conducted themselves really, really well. When you look at the fact that they get an out-of-date second-hand power unit, they get drivers that they know are never going to be developed into their stars, because as soon as they show promise, they're popped up into Red Bull. But they just go about their business and they slowly get better and better and better. And this year, I genuinely think you might see them start to outperform Williams as we go along.
I think it's going to be the pick of the teammate battles, isn't it? Probably. I was definitely shouting at the screen for Max to stop whinging, because it was getting quite comical. But
for me personally, with him shouting like that, it's nice to hear in a way. I know it sounds a bit like a tantrum, but actually it's just because he wants it so bad. And it's nice to have a driver that has got that much passion, that much energy on the grid.
Well, it reminds you of Seb. China, I believe. Was it China with the multi-21 craziness?
Or Malaysia, I want to say. Malaysia.
Yeah, it was in Malaysia. And it was, you could just hear Vettel on there going, come on, get Mark out of the way, he's too slow. And this was the same thing. That's a drive. That's a passion. And I completely agree with you, DT, that is what you want out of your racing driver. But Seb can back it up. Seb did back it up even when he wasn't supposed to. Max needs to start doing that as well. But I mean, he's got years ahead of him to do it.
He has.
Do you not think, based on the last year, that he can back it up? I know Sainz was fantastic, but I think Verstappen was a future world champion by a clear mile, country mile.
DT, you're only as good as your last race.
Oh, here we go. He did qualify fifth, which is his best qualifying performance.
I mean, I'd go as far as to say he's possibly the most naturally gifted driver on the grid maybe this side of Lewis Hamilton.
Who wants to be this side of Lewis? Well, not the other side. Anyway, I've just bringing up the Multi 21 paired DT. I still haven't edited the karting video that we did for the website. Can you even remember doing it?
I remember doing it.
Yeah. I haven't finished editing it yet, but I'm going to do it this year.
Okay. Oh, good.
Probably. That's the aim. I've been saying it for about 2 years.
Stone lighter back then. Thanks, Michael.
Cracking video though.
When are we going back?
Don't know. Might have to be a simulator, but I'll get on to that later. A little stat for you. Max Verstappen's 10th place finish ensured he is now, at 18, the youngest point scorer in Australian Grand Prix history. Current Red Bull driver Daniel Kvyat had previously held the record for finishing 9th as a 19-year-old on his debut in 2014, but he paid for that, of course, with his technical issues afterwards. Renault, again, they had a pretty good time of it. Jolyon Palmer showed some very good signs. Nice overtake on Valtteri, or battle with Valtteri Bottas. I think he was fending him off, wasn't he? He's got a lovely style about him. But we're going to talk more about Jolyon Palmer in the pre-Bahrain podcast, I reckon. Williams, big disappointment or a one-off?
Big disappointment. Actually, looking at the results, it doesn't look that bad, 5th and 8th.
Yeah, they recovered a little.
Yeah, but
Bottas started 16th and he finished 8th. Massa gained one place, but
we did have a terrible qualifying. It's because Q2 and Q3 were so good. You see that Q1 and Q2 were so good.
I mean, Bottas showed some quality though. He showed some great passes in place, and it seems to be the one thing associated with Bottas over and over again is you shouldn't be able to make a pass stick down there, and yet he always finds that little bit of extra space, doesn't he? But he's very respectful in the racing lines that he takes. He's not the guy that shoves people out of the way. He's not stupidly aggressive, doesn't cause the crashes. He's a cool, calm customer. So he had some great work, but he shouldn't be that far down the grid. Absolutely agree with you, shouldn't be.
Absolutely. As you said, Kyle Felipe, 5th, was he in there?
Yes, he was, yeah. So I think the only problem with Williams is sort of had 2 good years, but you can't really see him going forward. I think the only way is back, unfortunately.
I think they were just pretty forgettable, really, throughout the whole Grand Prix.
Oh, there are more forgettable teams. We haven't even got to them yet. Force India, were they a bigger disappointment than Williams, Steve? Because they've been showing some really good pace in testing.
Yeah, it's another one, really. I mean, in testing, I thought they looked really promising, you know, but I didn't really sort of see anything of that over the weekend, to be perfectly honest. I thought they just, I don't know whether that proved that they were on light fuel and all that sort of scenario that you can get in winter testing, but yeah, just sort of we're neither sort of here nor there, really. It was just a bit disappointing, I thought, really.
Manna, we can touch on them for the for Rio Haryanto's free practice crash with Romain Grosjean. Anyone see that in the pit lane? Anyone impressed by that?
I don't get what was going on. It seems both.
I think we might be saying that a lot with Rio this year, but maybe I'm being harsh.
Well, I don't know if it was totally his fault, because when you're in the car, the team wave you out to go, you go. And if there's a car there that you're not expecting, then...
True. It wasn't really his fault at all, was it? But there we go.
He probably should have looked, but really, the team mechanic needs to be more, like, alert.
Sauber! Anyone want to say anything about Sauber? You shouldn't do, because nothing happened.
Spot on.
Yeah, good, right? I think that's going to be a recurring theme over the course of the season two. And now we're going to stop off at Channel 4 to talk about the coverage very briefly, because it wasn't the BBC, although I may. There's a lot of BBC people on there, so it's easy to get confused. I like the coverage, I think. Sometimes like Steve Jones, other times I thought he seemed to be a bit bewildered about where he was. And oh, look, it's a really fast car, I can't believe I'm here. And he did keep calling it the Melbourne Grand Prix. It's like, it's not, it's the Australian Grand Prix and it's in Melbourne, but maybe that's just me. Anyone?
I did actually really like it. They made it kind of more down to earth than the BBC. It seems to be quite a lot more youthful and comical as well, especially with Murray Walker and like Daniel Ricciardo playing bass, which is quite good. And I really liked, they had, during the qualifying, they were talking about drivers and they put like on screen graphics, and they were really good, I thought, well, compared to what we've seen with the BBC anyway, which were just kind of basic and a bit boring.
There seemed like a broader breadth of the coverage, as you say, a bit more light and shade. They still had the technical stuff, but they still kept it light in other times as well.
Yeah, I think overall they did a solid job. I think Steve Jones, we've got to give him time to sort of evolve.
The novelty to wear off.
Yeah, I think he was a little bit deer in headlights occasions, but overall I think he did a fairly solid job, and I think what you got to remember as well is that he's not been sort of, I don't think he's done much sport in the past, has he?
Paralympics was the only one, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, it's quite new for him. But apparently he does, he, you know, he's a big Formula One fan, so hopefully he'll bring that passion with him.
He is now, I think. I don't know if he was like
well,
2 months ago.
Has to be one now, doesn't
well,
it?
Apparently, I was listening to someone who talked about whose wife works for the production company and saying that actually he's, you know, not diehard, but he knows his stuff.
How well will he get on this podcast?
Well, you know, we are in the top flight. We are the elite.
We'd always welcome him on, always, and then we could see how he'd go.
The only thing I will say about Channel 4 is what you said about Murray Walker. I was watching it, and I was kind of like half watching it, half not watching it, and pottering around at home. And I heard Murray's voice, so I kind of was like, oh, brilliant, Murray's on. And he had a bass guitar on his lap, and he just plucked one string and said, recognise that? What are you doing, Murray?
They decided that a good section would be to give everyone a go at a bass guitar who cannot play a bass guitar and see if they can play the chain, and of course no one can. So they had Daniel Ricciardo on there as well, and he was like, here's my version of the chain, and it's like clang clang clang. So right, well, that works. Yeah, people who can't play a guitar trying to play something that, you know, fair enough. But at some point someone will be able to play the guitar and they'll nail it.
Hamilton plays the guitar.
Well, he does everything, literally everything.
I think Vettel does as well, actually. Yeah. I seem to remember one BBC clip from years ago where there was something on with him playing the guitar. I know Hamilton does.
It's just a shame Damon Hill's on Sky.
Yeah, Damon can do it.
Something I did love, though, with their coverage, they started with the chain and showed all the action. And when that came in, they had the helicopter flying over and they played the Bond music, You Only Live Twice. And it was, you've instantly got the action and the glamour of Formula One within a 2 minute section. I thought that was a really good intro.
Well, that and the one with Jensen Button as well. I know it's a bit CGI, but those touches were really good.
I think they hit the nail on the head the first moment that coverage starts and you get past all the sponsors and you get past all the adverts, and Rich has hit it right. You get the chain, and that is Formula One. As soon as that music hits, your head is in the right space. It's Formula One time. And by going out and getting the rights to that music, they, I think, did a lot of people proud. I loved it. I was nearly out of my chair.
Mark Webber, who I thought was awesome, and it's just a shame he won't be at every race, because I think it'd be a big asset for them if he was. Okay, let's go rattle through the of the weekends. Driver of the weekend. Now, there is an actual official award. Again, it's something they've nicked from us, but they do a driver of the day now, don't they? So there's an official award. Ours is for the whole weekend. Who wants to nominate? And we'll say yes or no.
I'll go Seb Vettel, which has come out of left field for me. Everyone looks at me like I've gone crazy.
Explain that in a sentence.
He was ahead of where he should have been. I don't believe the tyre choice was his fault. He had a cracking battle with Lewis for second, and he was trying so hard. You could see he was trying, wasn't settling. Showed the fight, showed the drive, was where he shouldn't really have been. And for me, cracking work.
Oof. Anyone not Seb?
I'm going to say Big John Grosjean.
John Grosjean.
John Grosjean. Big John. That's gross in French is big, and John is John. So his name's Big John.
Okay. So that's amazing. How have we not ever had that before? Big John.
He's Rogro to me.
Rogro. Wow. Yeah.
But new team, 19th he started, finished 6th, and it was brilliant when he said, this is a win for us. I don't even know where he finished. It was just brilliant radio.
I was just going to put forward my driver of the weekend. Potential driver of the weekend is for Julian Palmer. I thought he carried himself extremely well when he was out of the car. I thought he demonstrated that he can drive when he was in the car. He looked smooth, he looked fast, he looked racy. And for me personally, I've always been a fan of British drivers. So I always root for our homegrown talent. And when Jensen retires, which can't be that far away, and Lewis isn't getting any younger, we've got to look to the future. And I'm not as excited as I was when Lewis came along, but I think we might have someone that could entertain us for a good few years.
I'm gonna hold the Palmer chat.
Speaking about the next generation of drivers, Kyle, you did a bit of karting, didn't you, in your time? It's probably about time for you to jump in an F1 car.
Yeah, let's get Kyle in.
Get the Oracle out there.
And Josh as well. Josh, I think.
Of course.
I raced from 8 to 10, I think, as well.
Look at that.
I've raced on a PlayStation with a steering wheel.
I've raced on a sim.
I'm going to enter some motorsport next year as well.
I want a racing license. We're all going to get our racing license. We'll still do that one day.
Let's do an endurance thing. They do a 24-hour 2CV race at Snetterton.
Straight in. Have we got one of those?
You've seen the size of me. I don't fit in a 2CV.
I think it's only one lap they do in that 24 hours.
One lap Anyway, we're not disrespecting Julian Palmer because I desperately want to talk about him in the next podcast, but that's a great shout. My vote, as much as I love left field, would probably be Roman.
I'd agree.
Roman, yeah. Steve?
I would go with Bottas. I thought he had a good clean race and he came from quite far down, 15th, I think it was, wasn't it?
16th,
yeah.
There's merit for all of them, isn't there?
Yep, so there's no definitive answer, basically. Team, give us a name.
For me, it's a split between Haas, which I think a lot of people would agree with, debut, scoring points, blah, 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 all the history that you've already alluded to. But also, I go to Toro Rosso. They just drove well, they handled themselves well. They're a decent team, they did really, really well this weekend. So they're my two.
Literally. I'd say Haas. Anyone?
Agree.
Mercedes for me. They didn't put a foot wrong as a team. Yes, Lewis didn't have a great start, but front row lockout, qualifying, front, 1-2 finish, and yeah, just didn't seem, they seemed flawless as per usual.
They did a pretty good job in the winter, didn't they? I think that's fair to say. Okay, how about this one? Pasta of the weekend. Yes, it's replaced Goat of the weekend, which was, what did it stand for? Oh no, it's greatest of all time, but that's not what it was supposed to be.
It was just you're a goat because you made an ass of yourself. You're an idiot.
Yeah, love it. Been mixing your animal metaphors. Collectively, it's the strength of the podcast. But now we get to call him Pasta because Pasta's not here, and he used to make an ass of himself occasionally. I wouldn't want to be
regularly
harsh on him. Who are we going to give that to?
I think some of the engineers in qualifying that didn't seem to know the rules that you had to complete a lap before the 90 seconds. Deadline, but they thought they just like the checkered flags.
Exactly, but that, don't get me started again. But that's the whole point, isn't it? They just didn't get it. And also, are you telling me that none of those leading cars could have just gone out for another lap at the end? It's almost like they went, sod this, we don't like it, we're not going to bother. It's their decision. They could have done that in a normal Q3. In fact, maybe they should do. Go and do that in Bahrain and then see what we do. Anyway, that's not the point. But yeah, engineers, great shout.
I'm going to say this at the risk of getting some help, but I thought Verstappen, people might hate me for it, but he came across really whingy. I was telling him to shut up as well.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, he ruined his own race because he ran into his teammate and he was driving quite aggressively and the back end was stepping out quite a bit. And I'm pretty sure a certain Jackie Stewart would be saying, you need to be driving more smoothly.
I love that. That's a great show.
Jackie Stewart needs to keep his oar out.
No, you can't say that.
He sticks his oar into everything and he's
got nothing else to do, has he?
The racing was good though, wasn't it? Made us all believe again.
Yeah. I was going to give it to David Coulthard for when Arnold Schwarzenegger was back on the grid. The first thing he said to him, great to see you back. You said you would be, so... that was the first thing he said to Arnie. DC, put it away.
Such a legend, just for saying that. That sounds like a pun I'd come up with, to be honest. And it's so rubbish, it's good.
And then I was going to give it to the paddock for the whole qualifying debacle, so fair enough.
I was going to give it to Lewis, because he had everything in front of him and he dropped it. And it's all his own fault.
Drop the ball, I love it. All right, let's...
Just to add, I would give it to McLaren Honda for just generally being rubbish.
I would say Ferrari when Raikkonen came in with his fire.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Saved by the marshal. Yeah. How about highlight?
Highlight for me was when Martin Brundle on his pit walk, if anyone else was watching Sky, interviewed Arnie Schwarzenegger, and he said to him, are you into cars? And he said, no, I'm into tanks. It's like you couldn't get far away from like Formula One.
You can hear him say it as well. I'm into tanks.
And then he finished up and said, well, if you do any more than 65 in California, you get like an instant fine anyway. So
that's his fault, isn't it? Did he bring that in?
He was a governor, exactly.
One highlight for me, Timmy Mallett getting 5 seconds. I literally looked there, it's like, oh, that looks a bit like Timmy Mallett, and then he looked at his shirt because it had the Mallett's Mallett on it. It's like, it is Timmy Mallett. Amazing. That's it.
My highlight was, I'm gonna embarrass myself because I'm probably gonna mispronounce his name, but Mauricio Arrabbiata.
Arrivabene.
His reaction to Vettel's start, that was pretty exciting. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, tough work. For all the right reasons, Alonso's crash, just for highlighting to everyone, there is still deathly danger available in Formula One. Don't forget that. And that you can walk away from a huge crash and just hug your mate and wave to the crowd a bit.
And I will say, just take that one step further, that actually, let's give it up for, I know we talk about the marshal with the fire extinguisher, but actually the whole race control for that saw what the problem was. Safety car had done maybe a lap before they realised they had to red flag it. They red flagged it, they cleared it, they got everyone out again as well. It was cracking work from everyone involved in that process. And that just goes to show the quality that Albert Park is. They always have quality work. They always have good guys there. They understand what it means to start this season. And they do it very well every year.
Got a highlight, Carl?
Agreeable though, really.
Yeah. Love it. Well, my one was Mark Webber doing the podium questions and Sebastian Vettel with him, because I would say that's the first time they've been together probably in public since they were teammates.
And actually got on.
Well, they did. It was, I don't know, Seb sort of said, oh, you know, something about him wishing he was still his teammate, and they had a bit of banter, and I liked it. I thought that it was nice.
It seemed genuine as well. That was the nice thing.
I did. You can edit this bit out if you want, but I did like the fact that when he interviewed Seb and Seb went, well, obviously I had a great start and I got past those two, you could just see Hamilton and Rosberg just look at each other and go, dick. Like, you could see the look of the faces. They were like, what?
No, I'm not. No, in fact, you reminded me, because I should apologise, in the preview podcast a certain swear word did slip in and it was me saying it, so it's my own fault and I've got to edit it, but I think it was Sammy Todd who picked up on it.
I just feel greatly offended that you beeped me and then you didn't beep yourself.
I went and just left it in there, and I won't do that this time. Will I? Have I done? Maybe I have just then.
I did pick up on it when I listened to it, because obviously I wasn't there, Steve as well. I mean, I listened to it and I just thought, oh, well, Michael's getting a bit loose with the language this year, obviously. Okay. And then realised that Richard had been bleeped, and I thought, I don't know what's going on there.
I apologise. I like the bleeps because it's more comic. But, you know, clearly everyone didn't mind me swearing because no one complained about it. So, and I know people are listening to it, so I know it's not that no one listens to it, but here we go.
It was another highlight. It was Vettel chucking the second place cap at Hamilton.
Did he?
Yeah, they're both laughing about it.
I don't know if that was in the green room, wasn't it? I see. I don't think they showed. Did they show the green room on Channel 4?
It wasn't.
I don't think they did.
I saw it afterwards.
I don't know.
It was in a room though. It was outside. It was just kind of underneath the, what do you call it?
The podium.
What's the big building?
Hangar. A helicopter.
No, I forgot the word. My brain's not working today. I apologise. But
platform. Stage.
Pits.
Like the whole complex, but you know the big building, which all the garages are in, and
paddocks,
race control, yeah,
race control,
whatever it is,
that bit in the circuit, yeah, that bit,
HQ, that'll do,
the building,
ground control
underneath it,
brilliant, that'll do, sweet, and the Toro Rosso battle was the other thing I was going to say, but I think we touched on that, didn't we, as a highlight? So, job done, everyone's nodding, right? Well, that was epic. But then, how much did we have to get through? There was a lot to get through, so I'm glad that we got through it all. Plugs time. The website, nrf1.uk, for all our blogs, betting tips and more. I'll come back to you on that one in the other podcast, Carl. Don't go anywhere. but loads of stuff. I've written the blog on quali. If you want to hear more succinct thoughts from myself on quali written down, then you can read that. And any of these guys, if they want to blog, they'll be on there. So you can read all those, nrf1.uk. And the website is still a bit of work in progress, but we'll get there, definitely. And you can get in touch with us at loads of ways now. Well, I say now, I mean, it's the same as it was. But Twitter, at the NRF1, facebook.com/NRF1podcast. We've got a few more followers on the Facebook page, which is good. And we didn't even touch on Formula One's sudden discovery of Facebook, which seems to be quite a nice thing for us to use. So that's very good. And you can email us, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. We very much love hearing from you. And we will be actually having a sort of tweets and social kind of section in our preview podcast ahead of each race, where we get to hear from you and discuss your thoughts and views. So that's lovely. Please get in touch. We do really appreciate it. Bahrain preview and our first predictions league update is on its way in our Bahrain preview podcast, which will be coming up in a moment. Loads of stuff on there, but and this dear panel will still be around, hopefully, possibly. But for now, thanks everyone for your time. Much appreciated. Do you want to make a noise to agree?
Yay.
Ow.
Indeed.
Let's listen to that. That's the most sense we've had all night. Okay, brilliant. Thanks everyone for listening. As I said, we'll be back in a few days with the Bahrain preview. Take care of yourselves. Get in touch. And we will be speaking to you very soon. Bye for now.